Namaste and Jai Guru. I am Swami Ishwarananda, and on behalf of Yogadas Satsang Society of India, with great joy, I welcome all of you who are joining us either in person here in this hall or online from across the world in this very special satsang that is happening today at Yogadas Satsang Shakha Ashram Noida, which is located close to the Indian capital, New Delhi. Today's satsang is very special for us because we have with us today our revered president and spiritual head of Yogadas Satsang Society and Self-Realization Fellowship, Sri Sri Swami Chidananda Giriji. It is also special for another reason. The beautiful altar with the pictures of our six gurus that you see behind me is a brand new altar, and our revered president Swamiji will be inaugurating it today. This altar is the beautiful end result of a collaboration between the SRF monks who helped design it and YSS monks and volunteer devotees who manufactured it according to the design. It is indeed a great blessing for all of us that our revered president is here to inaugurate this altar by showering flower petals. And it is a great honor and privilege for me to invite our revered Swamiji on the stage now. As a mark of respect, I request all of you to please stand up as he comes on the stage, accompanied by the Vice President of YSS, Swami Smarnanandaji.
Loving greetings, joyous pranams. May the blessings of God and these divine ones in the beautiful altar we have just dedicated flow out and lift up your hearts, lift up your minds, lift up your consciousness. All of you who are here in this beautiful YSS Noida Ashram, and equally so for the many thousands who are joining us online from around the world. God bless you. Gurus bless you. You know, isn't it beautiful, the new altar? So wonderful. And you know, I always remind you many times now that We should think of these altars as a portal, as a window, that each of the images of these divine ones gives us an opportunity through that image, through the divine qualities reflected in those images, entryway into that infinite divine spirit, our beloved father, mother, friend, the great God, source and destiny of our souls. So this new altar, yes, is very, very beautiful. I have no words to describe, except to say that it becomes even more beautiful when you take it within, when you use this outer altar to create within yourselves a point of contact, a point of transmission, a point of divine darshan and blessings, and transform these images into living personages, living presences. That is the only purpose for which we construct these beautiful outer mandirs, beautiful outer temples, our meditation kendras and centers and temples around the world, all for that purpose, so that each of you can be motivated and each of you can have the opportunity and the encouragement in the company of your fellow devotees, and most of all in the company of these divine ones, to create that inner altar through your own inner devotional perception, your own inner attunement, yes, your own inner adoration. So in that spirit, I am overjoyed to dedicate this altar and consecrate it for this high spiritual purpose. And in that spirit, let us now pray, let us turn our minds within and invoke their presence. Again, feel that you are making a living connection with each one of these manifestations of the divine as we pray. Heavenly Father, Mother, Friend, beloved God, Bhagavan Krishna, Jesus Christ, Mahavatar Babaji, Lahiri Mahashai, Swami Sri Yukteswarji, our beloved Gurudev, Paramahansa Yoganandaji, saints of all religions, we bow to you all. O beloved God, make my soul thy temple, make my heart thine altar, make my love thine eternal home. Be thou the only one, reigning on the throne of all my thoughts, all my feelings, all my desires. May we feel your presence within and without, all around us, all pervading, on this joyous and sacred occasion. Bless us, guide us, be with us always. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Very dear ones, let us have a few moments, a brief period of meditation together before we begin our rest of our satsang. So please sit in the meditation posture. Spine upright, body held perfectly still and yet also perfectly relaxed. Lift the gaze, lift the attention to the point between the eyebrows, the Kutasta center, the seat of the spiritual eye. Let all cares and worries flow away from the mortal form. Just be bathed in that light and that blessing of the divine presence. And let your consciousness flow inwardly into that point between the eyebrows, there to be greeted, there to be embraced by that all-pervading divine beloved. Dear ones, as you continue to meditate, let me share with you these beautiful and uplifting words of blessing. These were given by Gurudev on a similar occasion before an audience of devotees just like yourselves. And they reflect always his most sincere and most heartfelt desire for all devotees who came to this path and who would come to this path to feel the living presence of God. So as I read this, feel that Gurudev is invoking these divine blessings. Keep your eyes closed, keep in the meditation posture. Visualize and feel. Guruji says, Heavenly Father, bless us all, that we may manifest thy blessings in our health, in our mental aspirations, and in our soul expressions. Thou art the light in the stars. Thou art the energy in the atom. Heavenly Father, teach us to charge ourselves with thine unlimited power, with thy boundless wisdom, and with thine inexhaustible originality. Teach us to charge ourselves with thine unlimited power, with thy boundless wisdom, with thine inexhaustible originality. Come, Father, come as a blazing light, come as the glory in the stars, come as the immortal power behind our thoughts. Destroy the veil that hides thy face from us. Father, we will never be satisfied with anything except thee. We want thy guidance, thy strength, thy counsel in everything. As often as we think wrongly, O Father, let thy whisper in the temple of silence guide us to the right path which leads to thee. Let thy whisper in the temple of silence guide us to the right path which leads to thee. Well, dear friends, before we go further in our satsang today, I have something special to share with you, and that is to use this occasion with all of us here together at this beautiful ashram to announce the release of the hardcover edition of Autobiography of a Yogi in Hindi. Of course, the book has been available in paperback edition for many decades now, but available now in hardcover for the first time with better readability, a longer life durability of the book. Obviously, this is one that all devotees keep close by their sides in their journey through life, and the book itself has to last equally long. So we're happy that there's been requests over the years, and we're happy now to make this available in this beautiful and durable format in Hindi. And let me just add that a prayer that Autobiography of a Yogi, as our guru's messenger, as he called it, he said, "It will be my messenger when I'm gone," will continue to inspire souls everywhere, all around the world, many languages, more than 50 languages now worldwide, that it may continue to inspire them all on their spiritual journey, on their journey back to oneness with God. Jai Guru. So we all know about the spiritual journey that for many of us, perhaps most of us, began with discovering Autobiography of a Yogi. How many started their time on the path with this book? I'm one of them. So it's a joy to see this new book. And I like to think that the wonderful gatherings that we've had during these 5 weeks, hard to believe 5 weeks have gone by since we first arrived here in India this time. But during those 5 weeks, beautiful satsangs and programs in several cities in different parts of India. And I like to think of that as continuing. It's a continuation of that same divine journey that our guru so memorably outlines in Autobiography of a Yogi. So it's hard to believe that here back at Noida, here we are for, I guess you could call this, I don't even want to use the word, farewell satsanga. Okay, forget that. Erase that from the tape. There are no farewells in Guruji's spiritual family, and we know that. We know that despite time, despite distance, there's that ever-living connection, that ever-living bond. And even more so, as Swamiji was saying, in these last few years when in so many ways we've been able to come together in that divine fellowship, in that divine spirit of satsanga through our online activities and our various programs that devotees around the world can participate in together. So no farewells. during this farewell satsang. But the title that they gave me for today was The Transformative Power of Kriya Yoga. Transformative Power of Kriya Yoga. So I don't want to give a philosophical lecture or discourse about it. I want to share some personal observations, some stories, something that hopefully all of you can relate to and resonate to about this wonderful topic of Kriya Yoga. But first of all, let me just say this, that when we talk about that transformative power of this sacred soul science, this sacred technique of Kriya, to me there can be no greater proof, no greater evidence than when I come before a group such as these beautiful gathering of souls like we have today. All one has to do is look in the faces, look in the eyes, and more than that, feel the vibration that comes from any gathering of longtime Kriya Bonds, any gathering of longtime devotees of the YSS and SRF teachings around the world. And you see that transformation. It's very real. It's very real. Often I think to myself, you know, when I come for one of these satsangs or one of these talks, someday I'd like just to bring a big mirror and hold it up so you can see what I see looking here, because it's truly divine. The transformation that regular, devoted, persistent, devotional practice of the whole science of Kriya Yoga, which means the specific technique of Kriya, certainly, but also the other parts of meditation, the other parts of spiritualizing and balancing and purifying one's life to become those living expressions of what the soul in each of us truly is. Joy, love, understanding, wisdom, kindness, desire to serve, desire to give. All of these are the proof of the transforming power of Kriya Yoga. I'm remembering how our beloved Sri Dayamataji used to share with us that Gurudev told her very early in her start on the path, her following of the teachings. He said to her, Faye, as she was known in those days, you keep on like this, keep on with your meditation, keep on with your focus, your devotion, your dedication to God alone, to the Kriya Yoga path of meditation and liberation. He said, keep on, and the day will come, Faye, when you won't even recognize yourself as you are now. So it's really in that spirit that I made those remarks, because I'm sure that to one degree or another, they apply to everyone here. You know, I visualize so much the final days of our beloved Ma's life here on earth. I first met her in 1975, and then she left her body. She passed away in 2010. So I saw her over a course of about 35 years. And of course, by 1975, when I came on the path, Ma was already the spiritual giant. She was already the Sanghamata. She was already what all of us look to around the world as the living epitome of what the path of Kriya Yoga could give to each of us if we approached it with the same spirit, the same one-pointedness as she did. So that was already there from the beginning. And the decades went by, her love, her wisdom, her great willpower when necessary, her great fire when necessary, but most of all, her great outpouring of the love of Divine Mother on all of us, her and spiritual children that Guruji had placed in her charge. She showered that on all of us. But toward the end, in the last year, and particularly in the last months and weeks, and those of us who were blessed to see her in that time of seclusion when she was withdrawing from the body, she had already pretty much withdrawn from the outer conduct of administrative affairs in the work and was more or less in seclusion during that last period. But what struck me was each time I saw her over a period of those months, say with maybe a week or 2 weeks or longer in between, it seemed as though her physical form, her skin, the outer shell of her soul was getting visibly more and more transparent. Just transparent, you know, just like a turning into this clear glass that each time one came into her presence, more and more of that radiance of divinity that is the essence of all of our souls was shining through. It was deeply moving, deeply, deeply inspiring and deeply convincing, I should say, in the context of the transformative power of Kriya Yoga. Another memory that comes to mind is, as I mentioned, when I was just a young devotee on the path, early 20s, just discovered Autobiography of a Yogi. And I was living in Encinitas in California, where, of course, we have a wonderful SRF ashram founded by Guruji, who wrote his Autobiography of a Yogi there. And there were quite a few of us in that age group. We were called the SRF Young Adults Group, full of enthusiasm. I had just read Autobiography of a Yogi, coming to the meditations, coming to the satsangs and so on at the ashram there. Swami Anandamoyiji, who many of you know and revere as I do, was there to look after us and share wisdom and guidance, and he would conduct those young adult meetings. And I look back on that now, and then fast forward years later, decades later, and some of you may remember I spoke of this at a convocation shortly after being asked to take on these duties, and I was reflecting at how now Guruji's family of devotees, of lay members, was just filled with Kriyabans who had been one-pointedly, assiduously following the path, following the teachings, following the meditation, making the effort to change themselves for 30, 40, 45, in some cases 50 years. I tell you, the SRF community, when I started, and 40 years later, was a vastly different environment. I won't say better. There was charm in both. There was the youthful enthusiasm and just the sense of unlimited possibilities that comes when you're young. And yet at the same time, to see that come to fruition decades later, it was powerful. It was deeply inspiring. And again, transformative power of Kriya Yoga. And it was as a result of that that we deemed that the time was right to fulfill one of Guruji's long-held visions, one of his long-held wishes, which was to provide a formal structure for the devotees, the lay devotees, lay members, both in India and in the rest of the world, SRF and YSS. And that was this voluntary League of Disciples that so many of you know about. And the broader community of SRF and YSS, Sevaks and volunteers. So, again, I look for what to say about the transformative power of Kriya Yoga. We're surrounded by it. We wouldn't even be sitting here having this satsang. We wouldn't be having any of these programs in the last 5 weeks that just require literally hundreds of willing sets of hands and feet and hundreds of hours, maybe thousands of hours of dedicated seva, guru seva, giving to guru's work from that spirit of, oh, my life has been touched in meditation. My life has been touched by the divine hand of Gurudev through this worldwide dispensation of Kriya Yoga. And now what can I do to give back? And that's the spirit that makes this divine fellowship, that makes this divine satsang. You'll go to Satsanga Society, Self-Realization Fellowship, makes it such a truly divine spiritual family, worldwide spiritual family. So I'm saying this also as a means of thanking all of you volunteers, all of you Sevaks. On behalf of everyone who has benefited during these 5 weeks and in previous months and years, may I ask all of you to please join me in thanking them all. Coming back to Autobiography of a Yogi, you know, when I was growing up, and maybe some of you had this same experience, it was when you're a young boy or girl, the, you know, 8, 9, 10, or a little older maybe, the adults in your orbit tend to always look at you and say, and what do you want to be in life? What do you want to do with your life? You know, it probably starts even earlier. You know, do you want to be a doctor? Do you want to be an airplane pilot? Do you want to be, you know, a scientist or whatever it is? And when people ask me that, I never knew what to say. I didn't know any words for what to say until I read Autobiography of a Yogi. And I want to share this one line way at the end of the book, because then I knew. At least I had the words for it. I think I knew already, but I didn't have the words for it. Guruji says this. He says, life by life, each man progresses at his own pace, be it ever so erratic, toward the goal of his own apotheosis. What a word that is. You know, Guruji had so much fun with words. That word apotheosis, it means achieving one's divinity. It means God realization. It means achieving the goal of yoga. It means achieving the goal of all universal spirituality, achieving one's divinity. But you have to smile the way Guruji puts it, don't you? He says, every soul on the planet is progressing toward that goal, but as he says, sometimes in a rather erratic manner, isn't it? So I think one of the things that I keep telling myself, and I did over the years, and perhaps it's useful advice to all of you, stop being erratic. Stop being erratic. You know, one of the most powerful instructions, spiritual elements of sadhana that our guru gave, it's also one of the most simple, and it's just this: schedule your life. Schedule your life. You know, that doesn't sound like profound philosophy, does it? It doesn't sound esoteric or, I mean, it might if we translated it into Sanskrit, I don't know. But anyways, it doesn't sound like the profound yoga principle that it is. But it is just that. It is a profound principle of the spiritual path. Schedule our lives so that, number one, there's never any question that each day there will be time to meditate. Every day there will be time to meditate. It may be short, may be long, may vary from day to day, but that schedule is there to ensure that regularity and persistence in meditation, because that's where that transformative power comes into play. Remember what Lahiri Mahashai said about Kriya? He said, keep on with your search for God through Kriya Yoga, whose power lies in practice. I see lots of heads nodding. How are we going to have that practice without scheduling our life? So that's the first thing. Second thing is that we make a schedule so that we spend at least a few moments of each day absorbing the divine, the life-transforming consciousness of the guru through reverent study of his teachings. Study the lesson. Study the Guru's words. They're not words. They're not philosophy. They're not information. They are a sacred transmission. Through the medium of those words, transmission of his divine consciousness, his divine perception into your own consciousness. And lastly, schedule. Schedule so that you structure your life around the balanced plan for all-around spiritual harmony that Guruji sets forth in the lessons. I want to share something that that he said in this regard. And he was always so on fire and so proud, I think, really proud and enthusiastic to remind people of what India had given to the world. It was the basis of what he put in the lessons. It was the basis of the way he lived his life. It was the basis, that universal spirituality, it was the basis of what he brought to his organization, to his followers of East and West. So Guruji says this, and this is in this beautiful lesson 64 in the new series, the new supplement series of YSS lessons called Living a Life of Spiritual Balance, powerful lesson. There's two or three that that we could really point to and say, if you have time for nothing else, pay attention to this. This is one of them, Living a Life of Spiritual Balance. It's lesson 64. And so Guruji says, since ancient times, India has prescribed a real art of living for the complete and balanced development of every human being. India's pragmatic philosophy shows that man's highest necessity is one, permanent destruction of the threefold suffering, physical, mental, and spiritual, and secondly, achievement, positive achievement, of ever-conscious, ever-existing, ever-new joy. Permanent destruction of suffering and positive attainment of ever-new joy. And he says, all lives in the world should be molded in such a way that they express this sublime state. And then Guruji takes us down to the nuts and bolts, you might say. He says, then comes the question. Then comes the question, how can human life be thus molded? And he gives the answer in two parts. One, by organizing and scheduling human life according to a logical plan in order to attain the goal of existence, number one. And number two, by practicing the systematic Eightfold Path of Yoga, particularly the pranayama techniques of switching off the life current from the senses and freeing the attention to concentrate on and become one with the ever new joy of God in the soul found in samadhi meditation. I love this when he said, yoga is such a practical system of human development. It offers a super art of living. Super art of living, to teach yoga's proven methods that lead to the full development of body, mind, and soul is the aim of the Yogoda Satsanga and Self-Realization Fellowship lessons. I think you know by now that I never tire of speaking of the my great enthusiasm for what Guruji has given. He was like a ceaseless waterfall of purifying wisdom waters that just bathed, he came to bathe the entire planet, to bathe the entire global human family in that enriching and purifying and rejuvenating flow of not just wisdom, but practical techniques, practical methodologies for making our lives divine. We look around at the world today, certainly there's a lot of causes for concern, isn't there? There's a lot of suffering, a lot of tragedy, a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion. But Guruji is here to tell us that we should never forget that out of this, a better world is being born. Out of this, a higher spiritual civilization is being born. You know, there's such, if we focus only on the negative, we miss the positive. If we focus on the positive, we find great hope in various departments of human achievement, in medical science, in social justice, in different scientific and industrial and technological achievements, better understanding of human nature, better understanding of the way to prevent sorrow and suffering. So all of these in their own individual and sometimes separate ways, these are all giving us tremendous hope that there is a greater future, a better future ahead of us. But you know, it often strikes me that when I read about these and when you see about the different individuals who are working in these fields, it often strikes me that one thing is missing. One thing is missing, and that is what I would call a unifying vision. Something that, some thread, some framework, some overarching understanding that unites them all together, that unites them all together in a force that will truly bring about the emerging global spiritual civilization. And that unifying vision, where do we find it? Where do we find it? Certainly, there are many noble and highly spiritual thinkers that lend their voices to that cause, but for me, none of them holds a candle to the potentials, the possibilities of that unifying vision emerging from the divine teachings of Yogoda Satsanga Society and Self-Realization Fellowship. So I urge each of you, study the lessons. Build your life around the lessons. One of them has the same theme. It's called Becoming an Ideal World Citizen. It's in this new series of supplement lessons that are coming out over this last year or two. Living a life of spiritual balance, and vitally important, the art of introspection and self-analysis, to change ourselves, purify ourselves, to make ourselves what we want to be, to put into practice and realize in our own lives that transformative promise of Kriya Yoga. You may remember in Autobiography of a Yogi, I'm so glad this Hindi book was available today, because this is, I keep coming back to the lessons and the stories from this book. And another one is that you may remember that Swami Kevalananda, our guru's Sanskrit tutor when he was just a young boy in Calcutta, he was a great disciple of Lahiri Mahashay, the first one to teach Kriya Yoga openly at the behest of Mahavatar Babaji in modern times. And the Lahiri Mahashay, according to Swami Kevalananda, used to say, he said, no matter what the disciple's problem, the guru Lahiri Mahashay advised Kriya Yoga for its solution. Now, I want to share another story with you about this, because when I was in India last time, this was 2019, right before the pandemic started in 2019, I was asked by a newspaper reporter who had read this passage and said that Lahiri Mahashay telling his disciples that all you have to do is practice Kriya Yoga and your problems will be solved. And he said, "What is this Kriya Yoga? What is this Kriya Yoga? And does it have some magic in it that makes the problems just disappear?" And so it was a great question. And more or less what I answered to him is what I want to share with you all today. And it really, yes, it does have some magic in it. But first of all, let's appreciate what Kriya Yoga really is. Kriya Yoga, the science of Kriya Yoga, the techniques and the way of life that are the context for those techniques, this is really the distilled essence of the Bhagavad Gita, of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, that Eightfold Path of Raja Yoga, the timeless scriptures of India's Sanatana Dharma that come down to us, It's a full discipline, this Kriya Yoga science, a full discipline for spiritualizing and harmonizing body, mind, and soul. But especially it's those techniques that we apply in our daily meditation. Those techniques of, as Guruji said in what I read just a few moments ago, of interiorizing the consciousness, interiorizing the life force, awakening those dormant faculties of divine perception so that for the first time we begin to know, this is what I really am. I am not this body. I am not this changeable or mind that's so easily influenced to sadness or depression or confusion by the events around me. I am not that mind. I am the soul. I am the eternal Atman, a spark of that infinite, divine, invulnerable, immortal consciousness, immortal bliss, immortal life. So Lahiri Mahashaya was the first one to teach that, as I said, in the modern world. And, you know, as this person was referring to, when disciples would come to Lahiri Mahashaya and say, oh, Guruji, this has happened to me, and this person did that, or my children or my spouse or at work, this is happening or that's happening. Guruji, tell me, what should I do? What should I do? Bless me. Solve the problem. And what did he say always? Practice Kriya Yoga. Practice Kriya Yoga. So, you know, when this reporter asked me, well, what? Does that have some kind of magic to it? Well, yes, it does, actually. But here's in this sense, two ways. One way is that by practicing Kriya, and particularly by allowing the consciousness to dwell in that calm, still state that practice of the Kriya technique produces in us, what happens? Our intuition begins to develop. Intuition is the direct knowing power of the soul. You know, it's a great tragedy. In fact, one of the sources of most of the tragedies of and suffering and sorrows in the world around is that in most people, the vast majority of the masses of people, these divine faculties of the soul are asleep. Really, to be more honest, we could say they're comatose. And we need some way of awakening them. That is what Kriya Yoga does. Kriya Yoga brings that current of life energy into the cerebrospinal centers, awakening those instruments of divine perception in the spine and brain. And then intuition awakens. Intuition, it doesn't rely only on the limited reasoning power of the intellect. It doesn't rely only on what our senses can perceive and cognize. It knows correctly, and it knows directly. So as we practice Kriya and the intuition awakens, so that's the first way in which the problems happen. We sit and we meditate and we think, oh, now I see, now I know what I should do about this situation. Now I know the way to address this, some positive steps to take. So that's one way. But then the question comes, okay, I know what to do, but how am I going to do it? How am I going to bring this about? How am I going to bring into practice or manifestation the solution that my meditation-born intuition has revealed to me? So that's the second way in which this quote-unquote magic of Kriya Yoga comes into play. Kriya, as we go along year after year, decade after decade, Kriya awakens in us those latent, dormant powers of the soul. We have faculties, we have abilities, we have instruments of knowing, instruments of accomplishment that most people, as I said, are not aware of. Kriya is there to awaken it. Kriya is there to bring that about. Willpower, the power to achieve, the power to concentrate until one achieves a goal. Power to resist negative influences, very important in the world environment we have today. Power to resist negative influences. Power to tap into the universal ocean of prana, of divine life, to bring well-being, to bring healing in body, mind, and soul. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, if you were Lahiri Mahashai, what would you say if somebody came to you to ask about their problems? Do you have a better solution? I don't. Practice Kriya Yoga. Practice Kriya Yoga. Lahiri Mahashai, you know, I spoke about this a little bit at our Sangam in Hyderabad a couple of weeks ago, that how each of our gurus manifests a very definite and individualized divine vibration, divine qualities. And Lahiri Mahashai, as Guruji told us, was just being an incarnation of yoga, yogavatar, as he called him. He was also an incarnation of joy. His words, his teachings, his way of instructing disciples was always just conveying that divine joy. And you can really feel that when he said this. He said, though man's ingenuity for getting himself into trouble appears to be endless, yes, the infinite succor, or that means the infinite help, the infinite support, the infinite assistance that flows from the divine, he says, is no less resourceful. So though man's ingenuity for getting himself into trouble appears to be endless, that divine source of help and aid is no less resourceful. So that really, really in a nutshell tells us as much as we need to know about the transformative power of Kriya Yoga. We don't need to have long discourses on the scriptural references or on the arcane principles of the innumerable life energies and currents that flow in the astral and causal bodies that are the invisible substructure of our human life. We don't need to know any of that. It all becomes activated, it all becomes mobilized without our intellectual knowledge if we just practice. If we find the way to use that technique to access that shelter, that sanctuary of the soul, that refuge, as the Gita said, take shelter in yoga. Take shelter in yoga. That's what it's talking about. Take shelter in that science of Kriya Yoga, that science of entering into that interior refuge. Kriya Yoga Sharanam, that divine refuge that our Guruji and our Param Gurus have taught and that are leading us hand by hand along that path. I'd like to spend just a little time now in conclusion, and let's have a guided meditation together to experience some of the concepts that we've been talking about. And really it comes down to, as Lahiri Mahashai said, no matter how much trouble we get ourselves into, we always have access to infinite resources. We always have access to infinite help, infinite succor. Where? In that sanctuary of the soul, in that refuge of yoga, in that temple of the heart, in that temple of the kutasta. Even if we just put one little toe of one little foot in that sanctuary, what a sense of relief, what a sense of upliftment, what a sense of encouragement can be ours. And when we fully throw ourselves, when we fully surrender ourselves, when we fully live our lives day by day, moment by moment, in that divine sanctuary, in that interior space, that interior refuge that is opened by the practice of Kriya Yoga, then we always find what is necessary. We always find what we need to navigate our way through. So let's practice this. You know, Guruji gave one simple little chant, and we're not going to play it on the harmonium now, but in any ways, I want to make the point too about this, is chanting is so wonderful as a spiritual practice. But we have to remember the goal of chanting, and the process of chanting should take us into that state where after our musical and verbal and outer group chanting, then we take those concepts, we take those spiritual perceptions into mental chanting, silent mental chanting, and then ultimately into superconscious chanting. So I want to skip right to that mental chanting and hopefully superconscious chanting. So will you sit up straight and follow along? Just repeat. You can repeat silently with me and feel, visualize and feel these qualities of God that live in the soul flowing out over your consciousness. In the temple of my heart, God of beauty is now reigning. In the temple of my heart, God of beauty is now reigning. In the temple of my heart, God of beauty is now reigning. Of my heart, in the temple of my heart, of my heart, of my heart, in the temple of my heart, God of love is now reigning in the temple of my heart. God of love is now reigning in the temple of my heart. Of my heart, of my heart, in the temple of my heart, God of love is now reigning. God of love is now reigning in the temple of my heart. In the temple of my heart, God of peace is now reigning. God of peace is now reigning in the temple of my heart. In the temple of my heart, of my heart, of my heart, in the temple of my heart, God of peace is now reigning. In the temple of my heart, in the temple of my heart, God of healing is now reigning. In the temple of my heart, God of healing is now reigning. In the temple of my heart, in the temple of my heart, of my heart, of my heart, God of healing is now reigning. In the temple of my heart, in the temple of my heart, God of wisdom is now reigning. God of wisdom is now reigning in the temple of my heart, of my heart, of my heart, in the temple of my heart, God of wisdom is now reigning. In the temple of my heart, in the temple of my heart, God of bliss is now reigning. God of bliss is now reigning in the temple of my heart, of my heart, of my heart, in the temple of my heart, God of bliss is now reigning. God of bliss is now reigning. God of bliss is now reigning. Beloved ones, you see what is available to us in that sanctuary, in that refuge, in that shelter of yoga. No matter what a devotee's problem is, no matter what problem any of us have, if we take our consciousness within and invoke whichever of those divine qualities, whichever of those divine benedictions we need to address our difficulty, whether it's peace, whether it's wisdom, whether it's healing, whether it's that joy that uplifts us above the dualities and the ceaseless flux of life on this mortal plane. Whatever it is, we find it in that shelter of yoga, in that shelter of Kriya Yoga, in that Kriya Yoga Sharanam. I have no other advice. I have no better advice. And be a Kriya Yogi. Take the lessons, become a Kriya Yogi. That's the most valuable, the most personal suggestion and advice, loving advice that I can give to any of you. Practice the techniques, follow that balanced program of scheduled existence that Guruji lays out for us. And you'll see, over the years, your life becomes more and more divine, more and more purified, more and more transparent, as a beacon of spirituality, a beacon of divine qualities, a beacon of encouragement and help for all who cross your path. And how our world needs souls just like you. God bless each one of you. Guruji bless each one of you. Jai Guru, Jai Guru.